The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning, it's Donna Marie Doherty in for Greg Hughes this morning. Thanks to Marty there for the last few hours on the Naughty Alarm Clock and to Ryan Brawley there for giving us all the latest news. We'll hear from him again shortly in just an hour's time. Now we have a busy show ahead. And it's going to be a busy week ahead for many as well, with the St. Patrick's Day taking place tomorrow. So make sure to get in touch. You can get us here on WhatsApp on 086 60 25 000. Your voice notes are always very welcome. And as well, you can give us Caroline a call on 074 91 25 000. And also you can catch us on YouTube, on your smart speakers and on your smart tellies as well. So we're going to start and have a look at the Irish Independent. We'll have a look beyond the front pages and see what stories are happening across the world this Monday morning. So we're going to have a start here. And this one is about the price of a pint. And the headline, Pintflation. The number of Guinnesses that the average wage can buy has gone flat. So this is all to do with if you had your entire earnings, the average entire earnings, and it was spent solely on a pint of Guinness, how many pints would you be able to get? Well, it seems that we're going to be shorted by three as the prices for a pint of Guinness has gone up to €6. So increases on stout have reduced the number of pints of Guinness a person on the average salary would be able to buy. The number of pints that could be bought is with this pintflation has gone down by three, sorry. So the prices have topped €6. So before this, it was a total of 166 pints. And that was if you spent all of your money on Guinness, which is not recommended. But you would have been able to get 166. And now it seems it's only 163. So an interesting one. It's an interesting way, I think, sometimes to look at the cost of living and, you know, how to approach it. And it's easy as well to see that in a way that you can visualise it a bit better, you know, like, you know what a pint of Guinness looks like, and being able to put the cost of living in relation to that. Going on now to the Irish Times, there was an interesting piece here in the World News section, and it's all about the Middle East. But something that isn't really talked about is our pets. And our pets are a key part of our family. A lot of people, you know, they would refer to them as their other children. So there is a group that is now their sole purpose in here is to rescue the pets whose owners were forced to leave them behind. And it is Animals Lebanon, and their operation manager Reem Sadek was on a mission to get six cats in an area that was under Israeli evacuation orders. So, you know, the houses that they're dealing in have been bombed. They're all dilapidated and falling apart. And initially, they only managed to get five cats out, but they did get the sixth one. But since that initial operation, the charity has rescued more than 130 animals. And many of the rescues have happened because the owners have reached out and said, you know, can you go? And, you know, our dogs been left behind? Our cats been left behind? Please go save them. And it must be, you know, whenever we're talking about the war, you can get really, I suppose, bogged into the politics of it and the something as human as I can't bring my dog who, you know, I love if you have children and they know that their wee dog or their wee cat has been left behind. I think it just sometimes can bring back the fact that this is very real people that are getting caught in all this here. So the charity, though, randomly enough, also cares for a lion cub that was illegally trafficked into Lebanon. And that lion now, I think, is around 6 months old. And they're waiting to have that lion taken over now to a sanctuary. I can't imagine how it would be trying to house a lion and literally, you know, saying amongst the cats and the pigeons, you have a lion, a cat, a dog. It's like Noah's Ark. Having a look here now to the Irish Daily Mail, and we need to talk about Eric Roberts. So there's a bit in here, there's a bit in most of the papers about Dancing with the Stars, and Eric came in second. Everyone obviously is very, very proud of him. I think a lot of people had thought obviously that he was going to win, and we're all hoping that he would have won. But look, we'll not turn our nose up at second place. So they had to do two dances last night. The first was a Charleston, And there's been lovely visual photos coming out there of Eric and Ariana. And for that their dance, they were wearing a maroon suit. It's just so striking. So in this photo here, Eric sort of leaned over backwards and has his hands kind of out like sort of a puppeteer. And then I saw another photo, which was class, of him jumping over Ariana, and he was in like a nearly star jump position. But they really came in so very close. So it was all down to the voters. I think the judges didn't really have a say in it last night. And I think in the last vote that we had heard, himself and Caitlin, who won it, were both on 80 points. So it was a really, really tight one. But nonetheless, I had a look there at his TikTok this morning. They seemed to have good crack last night at his wee after party. And in all the captions that I had up, he was saying thanks very much and for all the support. So I'm sure we'll be hearing more from Eric. Keep an eye on his socials today. On, I'd say, you know, like the homecoming there that was in down and the crowd that was out for it. So he seems to be feeling very grateful for the experience and just the way that his career has taken off in recent times. Looking now to the Irish Daily Mirror, this is not something that I thought that I'd be talking about today. But Harry Styles has been branded as racist. And the reason for the allegations is Harry hosted SNL, the Saturday Night Live talk show in America. And with it being St. Patrick's Week, this weekend there was an Irish dancing sort of skit in there where Harry was dressed up as Michael Flatley type for Lord of the Dance. So the whole sketch in its full lasted for 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And I haven't actually seen it, but I've seen like sort of little clips of it. From what I can gather, the kind of idea was that it's like a nightclub and they're all snazzing, they're all out looking for girls and all this hair crack. And a woman comes up and is whispering to him, "Oh, would you like to dance?" And it's all very, you know, very seductive, very sexy. And she then breaks out into a jig. And then Harry goes back to this girl's apartment and she's like, "Oh, I'll cook for you." And they think again, it would be like, you know, those romance films, Lady and the Tramp style thing where they'll have the spaghetti and meat in the middle. But she made Irish food, namely cabbage stew and cream of fish. And then it progresses and the final part sees Harry and the other men matching the girls for step Irish dancing. Harry's dressed as Michael Flatley. And he ends the skit and he looks to the camera saying, "Happy St. Paddy's Day," which rubs me up for all the wrong ways. It's St. Patrick's Day or Paddy's Day. It's not St. Paddy's Day. You know, it's one or the other. Don't be mixing them together. But anyway, the views, the polar, there's been very polarized views to this then. So a lot of people saying it was in poor taste, that it was racist. Then there was other ones who are saying it's really funny, you know, like sort of calm down. But we do, this conversation does come up again around this time of year. You know, are we too laid back in all of the Irish stereotypes that's seen around this time of year across the world? You know, is it something that we should be taking a bit more seriously? Should we be offended by it? You know, that people go on about the, I suppose, Lagerlite sort of culture and, you know, like the fighting Irish, that type of thing. So if you have any views on that, do let me know, because I'd be interested to hear. You know, some people do take quite offence to it and there's other people who are just like, right, calm down, it's a bit of crack. So it's a toss-up between the two. Looking now to The Sun, there's a bit in here about Micheál Martin, and he's saying that Shannon's not being used as an American war asset. So we know the Taoiseach's over in America. He led the parade in Philadelphia yesterday and he will be going to the White House tomorrow. Whether or not you agree with that, it's going to happen. He'll be handed the Shamrock Bowl. But what he's saying is, as much as this is all about the relations between America and Ireland, the Americans are not using the Shannon airspace to refuel. So there's been people speculating about this. We heard it before around the time of the war in Gaza, and now it's resurfaced again about, you know, with the war in Iran. So there's a quote from Micheál here, and he says, "Shannon is not being used for those purposes, and there's been repeated attempts to conflate Shannon with both the war in Gaza, which was absolutely false claims, and this was a continuing narrative for certain quarters of the political for certain quarters politically, sorry, within Ireland, which I think will damage Shannon if that kind of argument continues. There is established rules in terms of airspace and the utilisation of airspace, but again, we have no strong evidence that our airspace is being used for any of the attacks on Iran. So that's what Micheál Martin has to say about that. In terms of the visit, I know a lot of people will be saying that he shouldn't be doing the visit. There's an argument there that it helps our relations with America. Then on the flip side, it's like, well, does it really? Because, you know, the whole last year, the big scandal out of that was that the whole housing crisis is a good problem to have, which rubbed a lot of people up the wrong way. You know, if you're really struggling to get a house or you're struggling with your rent, the last thing you want to hear is a president of another country laughing about, you know, the hardships, which is very much a problem in your day-to-day life. And I heard as well, actually, I was listening to a podcast about it, and it was one of the journalists who was over there, and they said last year, usually the way it is, that the journalists will get sort of 5 or 6 minutes in with the Taoiseach and the president. You kind of get your photo ops, you'll get your sound bites, you know, like that's the way that the job works. You'd be waiting for ages, you get in for your 5 minutes, and then you go out and they have their meeting. But that didn't happen last year. Last year, the journalists kind of got to stay for the whole thing, so the entire meeting played out in the public eye. Moving on now to the dairy news. So there's calls for better conditions for the dairy arts sector, and it is called the I Stand With The Artists Of Dairy campaign, and it was launched yesterday on social media, and it's looking at employment and contract rights, which is a very difficult there's the whole trope of the star of an artist. You know, it's very hard if you are working on an artist basis. You know, it's very project based. A lot of times you can be called in for a wee favour here or there and you don't really get recognised or the monetary reward maybe that you should. If you are being paid for a performance, it's not going to go by an hourly rate for all the rehearsals, the costume design, how much that costs, having to get in other people. I'm even thinking of the likes of, because there's a photo here of a parade on St. Patrick's Day that was in Derry. I'm assuming it's from last year. You know, how much do all the costumes for this cost? How much do you have to pay the person to make it? What if one of the costumes rip? Who do you go to for that there? And coming from sort of an arts background myself, I'm very involved with theatre. The commitment that people have to this kind of thing is kind of insane. I did a workshop at the weekend and the facilitator of it said that he would respect amateur actors, like drama sort of plays, more than professional, because you wouldn't, you know, this is what he said, this is not my opinion, that you wouldn't find a professional actor doing a 9 to 5 and then coming in to do 3 or 4 hours of rehearsal in the evening. And that's true. You know, there is the flip side of the people who are deciding they're going to pursue arts for their career and their longevity. They're not necessarily getting paid for all those hours of rehearsal either. It always has to come from a place of passion. And that's what we hear time and time again from people who do make it in the arts. And even Jessica Buckley, I'll be talking to our own Katie Gillen here now just after the break about it. In her speech, which we have a wee clip of, she says thanks to her mum and dad for allowing her to have dreams. You know, she's reached one of the moments she'll remember for the rest of her life last night. But that doesn't happen for most, and especially I think here in Ireland. So we're going to have a last look now here at Donegal News, and it's the front page here is about Catherine Conley saying let's look to the future with shared humanity. And she spoke out in her St. Patrick's Day message about the war and the normalisation of war, and we can't accept that anymore. She says that we must renew our commitment to peace and diplomacy in line with the principles of international law set out in the United Nations Charter. This was interesting though, because with the White House visit, and I think there's going to be a lot of sort of conversations might lead back to here more than we'd expect today, that, you know, that's the president speaking out. The government kind of then sort of said, oh, that's what Catherine Conley, that's what our president said. It's not necessarily what we've said. They didn't make too big of a statement about it, and I suppose that's just ahead of the American visitor, teacher Micheál Martin, going over, because, you know, if that meeting between Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Donald Trump happens again in the public eye, you know, how awkward or how difficult that be for Taoiseach Micheál Martin if Donald Trump, you know, starts talking about what Catherine Conley said. So I think they didn't make, the Irish government didn't make too much of a fuss about it to kind of try and sort of sweep it under the rug, I suppose. And then, look, Donald Trump is a very busy man. He's got a lot going on at the minute, so I suppose a lot of people might be thinking he won't have time to look at to see what other presidents are thinking of him. And I also, will he actually really care? Probably not. So that is our papers this morning. I am joined by Katie Gillen, a journalist from the newsroom. Katie, how are you doing?
I'm good, Anne-Marie. How are you?
I'm good. Are you tired? Any chance this morning?
I'm a little tired, but nothing that a cup of coffee won't fix at around 10 o'clock. So.
Good stuff, good stuff. Now, people are saying, Anne-Marie, don't be calling her out like that on air. You were up last night watching the Oscars, and it was a very big night for Ireland. So tell us all about it.
It was a historic night for Ireland and also for Irish women. So Jessie Buckley became the first ever Irish woman to win in the Best Actress category in at the Oscars. So she's from Killarney and has been acting for a number of years. She was previously nominated in 2022 for Supporting Actress. But last night she did the thing and she won. She had been the front runner all season. She had won every precursor award, something that was only achieved by Renee Zellweger back in 2020. So it was pretty much hers, but you know, sometimes you just never know that it could be somebody coming from the back. But she did it, and it was very emotional, a lovely speech. She paid tribute to her husband, her daughter, all mothers, and
We have a wee bit of the speech here. We'll just play out the wee 30 seconds that we have of it.
To get to know this incandescent woman and journey to understand the capacity of a mother's love is the greatest collision of my life. My family, my Irish family, they're all here. Ireland bought them flights. Where are you? Mom, Dad, thank you for teaching us to dream and to never be defined by expectation, but to carve from your own passion.
That's so emotional whenever she's calling out looking for her mum and dad in the crowd.
So nice. And she's had amazing speeches all award season, but that was, you know, just a lovely send off, I guess, to the role. If anybody's watched Hamlet, it's a very emotional film about motherhood. And, you know, she became a mother 8 months ago. So you can just tell whenever she's giving these speeches that, you know, this is a role that she cared about and something that, you know, she's carried into now as a mother herself. And, you know, she ended the speech with a bit of Irish and she said, Gur Míle Maith Agat and Slán. And, you know, it's just a great way of, you know, paying tribute to, I guess, Ireland and her, you know, her country. And it was just lovely.
And it is nice that it fell on Mother's Day and St. Patrick's weekend. Katie, yeah, for anyone who might just be discovering Jessie Buckley now, how did she get to this point? Like, was there any other big roles that they mightn't realise that they knew her from?
So she started off on a show on the BBC that was looking to find a role in Oliver on Stage. And she actually came second in that, and she became an understudy, but she felt that wasn't serving her, so she decided to go into acting. And it's been, you know, a long journey. She was in The Lost Daughter back in 2022. That was a Netflix movie and she was nominated for that. And a couple of years ago she was in Wicked Little Letters. I don't know if anybody has seen that, but a great movie with Olivia Colman, and she was very good at playing a very angry Irish woman. But I suppose Hamlet is now hopefully her breakout, and you know, we could see her now in bigger projects because of this.
That will be her role that she'll be remembered for, I think, definitely.
Yes.
Was there any other standout awards last night for you?
So there was actually a tie, which is a very rare occurrence. I believe it was in the Best Documentary Short, maybe two winners. It was quite shocking, but it was very well handled. Mm. And I guess one of the big contentious categories was Best Actor. Mm. So Timothée Chalamet had been the front runner for Marley Supreme, and you know, Leonardo DiCaprio was in there. And then, of course, you know, a couple of comments were made a few weeks ago about ballet and opera and
Yes,
how
Timothy.
they're dying arts. So that kind of pushed him at the back. And Michael B. Jordan came through and he won for Sinners. So Michael B. Jordan has had a fantastic career, and Sinners is his role of a lifetime. So it was a shock, but very, very well deserved. And that category was just stacked anyway. But Michael B. Jordan came out on top, and you know, it was interesting, but a few shocks, a few gasps in our house last night. Yeah.
And my favourite, not if yeah, that's a terrible thing, way to frame it, but I love the fashion at the Oscars.
Yes,
I think what Jesse was wearing was lovely. The pink and red was so, a lot of people wouldn't put them together, you know, but it was such a striking dress.
She looked beautiful, and apparently was a nod to Grace Kelly or some other actress from way back when, but it was a nod to her whenever she had won her Oscar back in the day. So yeah, it was a nice nod to old Hollywood.
Okay, Katie, thank you so much for, you know, what time did you get to bed at last night? The start of 11.
It was 3 o'clock, 3 o'clock. It was long, but no, it was worth
it. It was worth
it. Stay up.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us there. I really, really appreciate it. And we'll see you. You'll be back on air, I'd say, on Saturday.
I'll be back on Saturday.
It's
for the news at 10 o'clock.
News at 10 o'clock. That's Katie Gillen there, a journalist from our newsroom. What I want to just have a touch on here, because I had some comments in. Bear with me. I'm doing the stream as well. There we go. Everything's all good. I was talking about St. Patrick's Day there. And some of your comments have come in. It's never Paddy's Day. How offensive. It's St. Patrick's Day, full stop. This has been a major pet peeve of mine. It's St. Patrick's Day. So a lot of people saying that it should be called its rightful title. Referring to Paddy's Day is akin to the drunken Irishman stereotype. And then somebody else doing the absolute opposite thing. Oh my goodness, aren't the Irish all about taking the hand and having the crack? So a lot of different takes on that. I remember actually I was finished up college in around COVID times, so it was structured slightly a bit different. But one of my final projects was looking at the St. Paddy's Day versus St. Paddy's Day on Instagram, and looking at the ones that were spelt like Patty, P-A-T-T-Y, how they varied from from what we found anyway, because the St. Paddy's Day was more people outside of Ireland, because you wouldn't really get many Irish people who would say Patty. It had a lot more stereotypes in it. So it might be an interesting thing to look out on if you're on social media over the weekend. Going to take a short break here, and then after that there, have you seen much fly tipping happening around your part of Donegal? Now it's 9:30 here on The Greg Hughes Show. I'm joined by Councillor Michael Boyle in relation to fly tipping. Councillor, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Donna. Good morning to all your listeners. How are things?
All good, all good. Councillor, now, this is in relation to illegal littering happening between the Ardahi and Ardrah Road. I was in attendance at the Glenties MD meeting, and I heard Councillor Anthony Malloy talking about this here, and it was a strong talking point with the within the Donegal Municipal District, because it's where the two meet.
Yeah, that's correct, Donna. Just the two MDs meet on that road. So I had been talking to Councillor Malloy about this issue, and indeed Councillor Brian Carr there in Glenties, because Brian has a lot of issues there on the Frosters Road as well. It's just where the boundaries meet. But this has been on for years. It just didn't start last week. We always do a clean up on that road every year. But you know, troops are getting really fed up. It's not that there's a couple of bags. Like last year, it was hundreds upon hundreds of bags we collected. And indeed, I highlighted it at the very first MD last April when I was co-opted into the council. And you know what? It's only worse it's got. And I don't know what we're going to do about it. That's the biggest problem, because nothing seems to be deterring it.
Now, Councillor Malloy had talked about that he'd asked for signage to be put up, but it hadn't. There was works to go on to see that sorted. But what the discussion in that chamber was about was signage isn't really going to have an effect, because the people who are doing it, to be very blunt, don't really care about a sign.
Yeah, well, I think since that meeting, myself and Councillor Malloy met, and we were on that road, and like we identified, there's 13 different places now there's fly tipping going on. So I don't know many signs you'd want. You know, you would have the place littered with signs. It's going on that many places. And it just seems to be now that it's been fired out of cars. There's a lot of forestry for your listeners that doesn't know that road. There'll be quite a bit of forestry along that road. And it's been end up now hanging on trees. There's rubbish bags hanging of trees. You know, so it's an ongoing occurrence, but I don't think signage is going to solve this issue. But now, in one of the areas last week, the litter warden came out and we found names in it. You know, so hopefully we'll get something sorted with that now that they'll follow up on it.
And what kind of rubbish are we finding?
A lot of bottles, stuff that can be recycled. A lot of wine bottles, beer bottles, plastic bottles. Like the people are getting paid to take that stuff back now, you know. And I could understand if it's, you know, household rubbish, but it seems to be a lot of bottles in it. Now there were in one of the forests there were fridges. We took out the fridges out of it last year, you know. But you know, it's everything and anything that's been dumped, to be honest.
And for the likes of fridges, there the council do have services where you can go recycle that. You know, it's
we have one. On the SMD, we have one up in Lahey, you know, and they're very good up there. You can take anything up, but I don't know about people's way of thinking, you know. And it's the same people has to clean up this mess the whole time, you know, and it's not fair. Actually, it was in Ardra yesterday at the St Patrick's Day parade, and We were in a cafe having something to eat, and there were 8 Australians sitting at the table beside us, and I could hear them saying how beautiful it was, but they couldn't get over how much rubbish was all over the county. You know, and it's not a good signal you want to be sending out. No. And you know, a lot of good groups do go out and give up their time to pick up this rubbish, but you know, it's people's way of thinking. Like, it's not hard to take your rubbish home.
That is really disappointing whenever you hear. Donegal's lovely, yeah. It says here, but, and whenever it's like it's such an easy issue to fix and to prevent.
Yeah, no, and we can't talk highly enough with the litter wardens anytime I phone them about anything they're stood out, but, you know, it's not them that's causing the problem, unfortunately. It's the people's way of thinking, you know. And I know people would say to me, oh, well, that's people down in Yarn, or that's holiday homes. Mm. For the stuff we found, it's not that. You know, and it's only local people that's dumping their stuff too. And, you know, it's not they shouldn't be throwing it on their own doorstep. They should be, you know, we should be tidying things up. And it's great to get tourists into the area, yeah. And we need to have our roadsides clean. You know,
Who ends up paying for this? All the cleanups.
Oh well, it'll be the council. Now we have one forestry that's a privately owned forestry. We did contact them last year about this. Because we can't actually get into the forestry to get it cleaned out. There's that much of a mess. So now they have said that they are coming on the 25th of March to do their forestry. But like, there's a lorry load to come out of it, you know, and they're going to be it's in underneath branches. You can't physically even get in to get at the stuff. So they're going to have to start cutting branches to get sneaked in there to try and get some of this rubbish out. But it's right on the roadside. Now, it mightn't be visible. It mightn't be visible from the car, because it's lower than the road. But if you stood there, you wouldn't believe the amount of rubbish is in it.
Well, we actually have a comment in there. That's what somebody's saying, that they were in Donegal, somewhere in the county, for a walk early on Sunday morning, and that they were disgusted by the aftermath of takeaway litter from the night before. You know, and then they ask then, is it up to the tidy towns or the council, or, you know, should there be an onus on the takeaways? But I suppose, you know, whenever somebody leaves the premises, you can't really control what they do after they go.
No, well, that's it too. But, you know, and it's unfair in these local people, you know, cleaning up. Like, we usually do a bank holiday Sunday once a year to do this, our Dahi Towers, our road. You know, and them local people are giving up a Sunday if they're when they could be doing something else with their family. To clean up after other people, you know, and it's not on this day and age that people should have to do that.
Whenever as well, it's whatever you say, the bank holiday Sunday, it sounds like, you know, when you go back every Sunday and all your work's been undone. Somebody else asking here, can the Gardaí set hidden cameras? And which was a point that I wanted to ask you about. You know, there's calls for CCTV to be set up. Is there any more progress on that?
Yeah, well, like, that is okay, setting it up, but like in that instance, we have 13 different tipping areas. You know, it's hard to set cameras up in them all. Now, I would be calling on cameras. There's one forestry at the top of Ardagh, and it's people do pull in there. But I'm hoping to meet the culture on that maybe in the next couple of weeks to see can we get it fenced off, because it's a good place to pull in, but this is where a majority of the tipping seems to be going on. And if we could get a camera or something there, it would be nice to catch somebody doing it, you know, because it might deter other people from going there to do it then. But
say somebody was caught, Counselor, what can you just remind us of the ramifications of it?
Well, come here, Donna, I haven't been on there that long. I haven't even seen anybody been. I haven't even seen anybody been caught. You know, for it. But I think it's only about €150 fine. Mm. You know, there needs to be massive fines or something put on this. You know, it's costing the council a lot more to do these cleanups, taking away the rubbish with pickers and bags and everything. You know,
they're not covering themselves.
You know, I think there has to be something done on it, and it's ongoing all over the county. It's not just here.
It's not.
It's everywhere.
And I remember up until recently in around East Donegal there was issues with trying to get a litter warden. Now they have that sorted there now, but you know, there's one or two, maybe max, I think, believe litter wardens per municipal district, and you can't, you know, the litter warden's one person, and whenever you have 13 occurrences on one road, like, you know, there's only so much one person can do.
Yeah, and that's only the main road that I'm talking of, where the Glenties MD comes in there, meeting the JA school. Like, and that road too, there's another six or seven locations, you know, on that. And even the principal on meeting the JA school was on to me about it, that the children there would even might partake in the cleanup, you know. But that's not the way it should be done either, you know. Mm. You shouldn't have to put our children out to clean up the side of the roads, you know, for somebody else firing stuff out their window.
And it's great that the education and all is starting young, and you know, we hear saying, oh, it's great the young people are caring, but there's sometimes there's an air of element here that it's to kind of try to teach older dogs some new tricks.
Yeah, I was just at a thing there a few weeks ago in Donegal town. It was about children, these coders, but they were on about archaeologists, and one of the guys says, it's a pity all these archaeologists were all coming on gold and coming on everything years ago, but our generation, when archaeologists start digging up, it's going to be litter we're going to leave behind us, you know. That's what they're going to be finding on the ground.
That's
it's a sad way to think about it.
It's actually a good thing to think, you know, because the plastic does take a long time to break down. Yeah. Councillor Michael Boyle, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Donna, and a happy St. Patrick's Day to all your listeners as well.
And
hopefully all the parades that's going on at the minute in the county, is good to see so many people about. I was at a few parades over the weekend, and it was nice to see with a massive one there in Dunkinelly. I don't think there was ever a bigger crowd at a parade there, so it was great to see.
That's good. Aye, and there everybody will be up, and I suppose now just the messages for people, whenever you're out enjoying yourself, just take your wee bits home with you.
Take your wee bits home, that's what it's all about.
Perfect, Michael. Thank you very much. That's Councillor Michael Boyle there. Member of Fine Gael, was co-opted last year. His brother Manus then was initially elected and is in the Shannon. Now we have another comment in here in relation to litter. Fly tipping remains a problem in rural villages because there's no fear of being caught. CCTV could be a much better option for catching people. And because there's witnesses, people don't have to go to court to give evidence. And there's an element of that as well. If you do see somebody and then it all comes out, you know, there is a pressure, because if it's somewhere that you're from, like, it's going to be your neighbour. And like, do you want to be the person who is brave enough to go up and testify in court that you saw them throwing rubbish out the window? You know, like, there is people who will do that, and you know, fair play to them. But for others, you know, there's a lot of keeping the peace that goes on as well. More people need to report witnessing of illegal dumping, and that might make people more afraid of doing it. There was, you know what, I was actually taking a wee spin myself, and there was a coffee cup that came flying out of the car behind us, and I gave a wee toot, but I don't, you know, I don't even know if they really cared that much, to be honest. Welcome back now to St. Patrick's Day. The only time Irish presidents gets to the White House is St. Patrick's Day. The Germans, Italians, for example, seem to get in any time. The Taoiseach wouldn't be heard any other time. or any of our leaders, they never invited, only under the shamrock. And this is interesting because I believe it was it the Clintons who weren't really that much into it. And then whenever Barack Obama came in, everybody thought it was going to fall away altogether. But then Barack Obama got really, really into it. And Ballymoney? The new that we town down the way, is it Mayo, that's where he has connections. So he got super into it. So I kind of gave it a new lease of life again. It is an interesting one because you do have to ask, you know, the meetings, while people are saying other places don't get the access to it, you know, is our, I suppose, quote unquote access, is it worth what people are making it out to be? I have Brendan Devaney here with me now for the DL debate. Brendan, the Donegal, they remained undefeated just up until the weekend there.
Yes, they did, Dunry. First defeat, but we're still top of the title, so top of the standing. So listen, we'll take it away from home. Wasn't our greatest performance. Conditions were terrible, you know, but we managed to, claw back a big half-time deficit. But we put ourselves in a brilliant position early on in the second half. And from there, Dunry, it was only looking like one winner, particularly with the breeze and the two-pointer option. But fair play to Ross Common, they stuck in. They had a very bad performance the game before, which one of the years is shut today. My wee boy's hollering at me here from my far
door. You've an assistant.
But yes, Ross Common were stung, but I'll let him on, see what he probably makes more sense of me. I'm scrambling around the house here trying to get away from him. Listen, he's quite insistent, yeah, like his dad. But no, last day out, Russ Common, I think, were stung, and that's their last home game. So you gotta think that there was a lot of spirit in their dressing room, and the game, I suppose, not as.
Oh, Brendan, I'm just losing you there ever so slightly. Hello. Okay, you know what I'll do. I'll let him out, and might be able to get him back in. Now, bear with me one wee second. We actually had a comment in there from somebody who was down in Roscommon, and they were saying that they were down at the Donegal match in Roscommon, and they were disappointed with the result, but they were very impressed with the facilities. The large covered stand and the space on their grounds. They won an All-Ireland in 1944 and have less of the less than half of the population of Donegal. Its main stadium. So they say then they were talking about McCool Park and Ballybuffet, that it's small and outdated, and the other two in Ballyshannon and Letterkenny, in this caller's opinion, isn't much better. So well done to Roscommon. They say, and this is a bit of a harsh thing, they say they're very embarrassed Donegal supporter, but that's not to do with the result, but to do with the facilities. I suppose, you know, whenever we have people come into our areas, you know, you want everything to be true, no more than what Councillor Boyle had said there, that, you know, whenever you have visitors and it's the wee things like that there that be letting you down. Brendan, I haven't seen him coming back in there just now. I wonder, maybe he lost signal. What we'll do then, we'll take some comments until we manage just to get Brendan back in there. So we have... more on St. Patrick's Day. Could people please stop saying Paddy's Day? It's St. Patrick's Day. And there's no one to blame for the tag of the drunken Paddy. We created it, live up from it from time and time again. And if we want to change the perception, then we need to do something about it. The biggest problem is that the celebration revolves around alcohol. And you will see that we were actually having a wee joke there in the newsroom. We're saying how long do you think it will be before somebody posts an AI photo of a green looking Guinness? Now, I think I have Brendan back here on line one. Are you with us?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I've got the tantrum sorted too. I don't know what happened. I think I tried to move to another room and I might have lost you. Sorry about that.
No, you're all good. You're all good there. I don't know if you heard there. There was just a comment and they were saying that they were really impressed with the facilities down in Roscommon.
Yeah, they've upgraded down there, tried to make a new stand, but I think yesterday there was very little shelter right up, I think, you know, maybe half of the stand back. Because honestly, I've seen some weather in my time, but them hailstones, people might have seen it in the Sunday game. The keeper was coming out of his hand over his face. He could hardly see as he was coming out, they hit the kick out. There was two massive fields gone. So listen, fair play to the lads for Soldier. And listen, we still have Monaghan next week. If we beat them, we're in the league final. But as Jim has been saying, he's not overly barred. The big thing in the league is always about staying in Division 1, and we're sitting top of the pile now. Whether we want the game with Kerry or not, there's a lot of question marks about that.
Now, you have a big week ahead of you, so you do.
We do, yes. Plenty happening. There's a big Donegal Diaspora meeting coming up in Philadelphia, yes. So this evening, Conor Gibbons, Kieran Porter, Brian McLaughlin are going to come on just to talk about it. So, yeah, of course, Highland are heavily involved in it. Sean's coming out, and Kareen and Oisin as well. So it's business and GAA. It's like a networking. So it's a great coming together, and this is the first one, and I think there'll be many more of them. So, yeah, it should be an exciting week ahead.
And also you have on Brian Coden from Kilkenny, and Brendan Kilcoyne, of course, is also going to be on. But then you have Gary Boyle about the under-20 season.
Yeah, the under-20 season starting this week. Gary was in charge last year, very unlucky in Ulster final. Couple of injuries last year, and a very late score, a very debatable late score, kind of robbed us of an Ulster Championship. So Gary's back here, starting with Fermanagh this week. Brendan's up to wrap up the GAA, and of course Brian Cody, the legend of hurling, probably the most famous manager, synonymous, 11 All-Irelands as a manager. He was down at the Burt Dinnerdown, so I'll get an interview with him. He doesn't do interviews, Donnery, but he kindly gave us one for Highland.
Good stuff, good stuff, Brendan. Well then, look, enjoy the big week ahead, and we'll be looking forward. Actually, is Donegal playing next weekend, and is it actually a case now that they need to win the rest of their matches, or how are the boys fixed now?
Yeah, last game this week against Monaghan. Now, Monaghan is going very poor. You know, they've had a real tough season. So, listen, if we want to win that, we will. The big thing is, again, it's the Kerry thing. You know, do we want another game at Kerry at Crow Park? Who would that benefit the most? That is a very complicated one. I'll throw that question to Kilcoyne this evening, actually. I'll avoid it now.
Fair enough. That's fair enough, Brendan. Look, thank you very much. Dale Debates on this evening.
Thanks,
after the 7 o'clock news. Cheers, Brendan. That's Brendan Devaney there. I'm going to take some more of your comments. The littering conversation now is really, people are having a lot of strong feelings about it. They're saying it's not only in our draw. At least 12 sheep, dead sheep were dumped on the Jarrig Lane, as well as suitcases and coffee cups. Now, the Jarrig Lane seems to be another wee area that struggles. And I don't know, is that because it's the border county? And there's times you find that, you know, whenever there's an area so close between two jurisdictions, especially whenever it is technically like an international border, they can kind of slip between two stools. Another one here, I don't condone fly tipping or dumping, but if I look over the past few years, the cost of the wheelie bins almost doubled in price. I'm sure the cost of living increasing, we'll see more of it. And that's also very true. You know, whenever you're looking at what your outgoings are that week, you know, what's going to be the first thing to go? You know, it's not going to be the heating. It's not going to be making sure the weigh-ins are sorted for school. It's not going to be your food. It's going to be the things that you can try, find some way around. And it's, you know, as well, I find from having done Irish Protect, you know, you'll have your core group of people who will really care about this very strongly. And then for other people, it just, for their circumstances, it can't be a priority. And that doesn't excuse the fact that it's happening, but it is just the reality that we're living in. A comment here on the Oscars. Good morning. In another big Irish victory on the night, to Dubliner Richard Benham of Lynchpin of James Corden's Avatar franchise won his third Oscar for visual effects work on the Avatar Fire and Ash. So that's him accepting his third Academy Award. And he said that he wants to thank all of the families that supported him. So it's nice. It was a big night for Ireland, so it was. I want to take some comments here. Now, this is about the Buncrana Nursing Unit. It's so sad to see, this is now in relation to this here, it's that the works that were meant to happen at the Buncrana Nursing Unit aren't going to be happening now until quarter three of this year, but the works themselves are going to take a year and a half to do. So because it's being pushed down the line, it's going to take 2 years before people can get back in. And there was one lady who gave a speech at the protest. Ryan from the newsroom was down there. that she said that her mother actually had played a large hand in getting that site established. I think the land had originally belonged to a member of her family. I think it was her uncle. And her mum was one of the people then that was moved in March. And that woman ended up in Remelton. And, you know, to be, she's in her 90s, and to be sent that far away from the people she'd been familiar with, you know, like her whole life, it's sad. Like, there's no way about it. It is sad. And, you know, if you had somebody in, my granduncle was, had to be moved, and he's no longer with us. But I remember the time that moved. That was, you know, I could see how much that was stress, and it was my mum that was looking after him. And that was only about half an hour that he was moved. So, like, that's a big move. And it's a big move for somebody of that age as well. But this person's saying it's so sad to see, because the same old people who are failing to get a bed in the nursing home are the same people who fought to have such a unit in our town, and the delay is simply disgraceful. So that's kind of the same point that's being made there. You know, how... It's hard. It's a hard one, because it is the people who laid down the foundations now that are kind of suffering the most. I just want to briefly mention first our win a €10,000 home makeover plus €10,000 in cash. So Highland Radio's home makeover draw in association with Foy's has just gotten even better. So from Monday the 23rd to Friday the 27th of March, we're doing a grand giveaway every single day. So for 5 days, you'll have 5 chances to win €1,000 as well as the €10,000 home makeover, as well as 10 grand in cash. If you have your ticket, you're already in the draw, but if you haven't yet, get it now. It's the time. So you can go to highlandradio.com. There's a wee button there that says win a home makeover, and then there'll be a very simple question to answer, and you can get your ticket is 15 for one or 5 for €50. The main draw will take place on Around the Northwest on the 2nd of April, so make sure that you do not miss out your chance. As we're talking about there, the cost of living, so €1,000 would go a very, very long way, as would 10 grand, and as well, just imagine getting your house all done up lovely. Oh, it'd be so nice just in time for Easter. Now, I'm joined by Senator Linda Nelson-Murray and to talk about the school meals programme. How are you doing, Senator?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing, Anne-Marie? Thanks for having me on.
I'm good. Thank you very much. Now, there's a survey out, and it says that half of the food from government's school's meal programme ends up being thrown away. So how's that come about?
Well, there's been a very big survey that we've done, I suppose, over 5 weeks in January and February, and we had 8,000 responses, would you believe? And it was from parents, teachers, principals. We also did a lot of work in the Joint Directors Committee on Education. And I suppose this is an open and honest survey, one that we need to listen to parents on. And it shows that parents have some constructive criticisms when it comes to the hot school meals. And before we roll this out, which is part of the commitment for government into secondary schools, I think it's important that we take those on board, and that we try and, I suppose, more fine-tune the hot school meals programme. So there's a few different reasons for why some of the meals might not be eaten, or why there might be waste. One would be that I think if you see from the stats on the survey there, that most parents actually send in a lunch with the hot school meals. So parents are maybe worried that the child mightn't like the hot school meal, and they're sending in a sandwich as well. Sometimes if children are absent, it's actually a little bit difficult to cancel your hot school meal within that day. Like, for example, I'm a mum myself, Anne-Marie, my two kids are 10 and 11, and we've the hot school meals now since January. But if my child was sick tomorrow, if it wasn't a bank holiday, but if they were sick tomorrow, I couldn't cancel their food today for tomorrow. You have to cancel it 2 days before. So there's a few reasons there. And then obviously there would be a reason that some children don't like the food. So there's lots of different things that we need to look at when it comes to waste.
And, you know, we do hear sometimes that the food that the children are getting, that they aren't eating it. And that the options there can be, you know, maybe not really catered to a child's palate.
Yeah. Do you know what? You've hit the nail on the head there. And I think there's something that we need to look at when it comes to nutrition versus consumption. Like the interdepartmental working group, and that's made up of the Department of Health, the Department of Social Protection and the Department of Education, have set up a group to actually work on this. So it's an ongoing work in progress. So just to remember that this only launched in 2019, and already by 2026, we have over 500,000 children every day getting a hot school meal in 3,200 schools. So it has been a very quick process. However, We are trying to make the meals as nutritious as they possibly can. So last September, we reduced the fat content, the salt content, and the sugar content. But there is a balance between making sure children like the taste as well as it being nutritious. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know from one of the suppliers, they told me that they wrap the sausages now in a seaweed, which is lovely, but it probably doesn't taste like the sausages they might have at home. Chicken goujons are covered in like a rice flour, and not breadcrumbs like maybe you or I might be having them at home. Do you know the way? So I think there's a balance on kind of having good nutrition, but also having them tasty. And I think that's something that we need to look at. And I would encourage that we do focus groups with children before we actually change all this. Do you know the way? They actually get them to taste it and see if they like it. There was one school I visited in particular, and about two or three of the kids says, we used to love the potato cubes, but now they can't do them anymore because the company that they were using were frying the potato cubes and that's not allowed anymore. So now they don't have the option of them and they miss them. Do you know the way? So is it better to give the child food that is, you know, a good bit nutritious or totally highly nutritious and maybe that some kids aren't eating them? So there's a balance there.
There is, because whenever you have 3/4 of the parents saying that their children don't like it, you know, that's definitely not a balance. And there will be children where this might be their only guaranteed hot meal a day. Like we're seeing the cost of living go up, the price of oil, and you know something has to give.
That's like really, again, I'm so glad you've said that, because I have to say I was very ignorant to this when I started. I never thought when I opened up the discussion on the hot school meals, I genuinely thought we were talking about the quality of the food and what it was like and the portion sizes. I never thought that St. Vincent de Paul had to help 112,000 kids last year. Mm. I never thought that Barnardo's would come into the committee and say that this has just been a game changer in terms of children having a meal. I never thought that a child mightn't have eaten since the same time yesterday. You know, so like it is really positive that we have this scheme and that so many children have access to food and that you're not being alienated. Like when I was in school back in the late 70s and early 80s, the nuns will come in and say, who doesn't have a lunch today? You put your hand up and I got the carton. Well, sometimes I did, or other people got the carton of milk or the hot cross bun. But now every child, like no one is differentiated from, because everyone has access to it. Mm. So that is a good thing, but we have to make sure that it's eaten as well. The other thing is that we've obviously committed to get this into secondary schools as part of the programme for government. And at the moment, we don't have it in secondary school. So we don't want to have that cliff edge where you leave sixth class and then you don't have anything in first year. So time is of the essence, in my opinion. And we need to get this fine tuned and ready for secondary school.
And the focus group that you would like to see in place, is it in motion to get that set up? Or is this something that you would just like to see that there's nothing in place for yet?
These are part of my recommendations. And I introduced this to the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party in February, and would you believe on the evening that I presented it, it was adapted as policy. So that means that we will be looking at these recommendations to form government policy. And obviously the Minister Cleary has also asked for a report to be done at over 400 schools. I think he's waiting on the results of that as well. So I'm sure the answers of that will be similar to what we have here. And these are the recommendations that we need to look at. Another thing will be portion sizes, Anne-Marie. So if you've got a 5-year-old child, they get the exact same portion as somebody who's 12 or 13. Makes no sense. And that would be another reason why there'd be some waste, because a 5-year-old can't eat where a 12-year-old eats. You know, when a 12-year-old eats, he needs to eat more. So there's lots that we can work on to make this a better scheme.
Well, we just have a comment in there saying that the portion sizes are a problem, that every child is served the same, which isn't just as you said there, a 5-year-old might need the same as a 12-year-old. Exactly. We have another comment in saying that my child hate the school's meals and we opted out this year because they were just bringing it home to put it in the bin. And that the food's cooked in these central hubs, and then they keep it warm, but it ends up sweating in the plastic packaging. And I'm not being funny, but there, you know yourself, there'll be times you might get something out of a deli and then you won't get to eat it there and then. And it's rotten. And just as we said there, like this, whenever that's that child's only option.
Yeah, so there's one of my recommendations is about consistency. So Anne-Marie, just to explain the way some of the food arrives into school, and it depends on the size of the school. So you've got some suppliers that if the school only has a smaller population, they cook it in a, as you said, a central hub, and then it goes out in a hot box. And food can sweat. I mean, you know, I have a small business myself and my husband. We have an activity centre and we cook food as well. If you leave rice or if you leave pasta for a certain amount of time, so you know yourself at home, if you cover it in tin foil or cover it in cling film, it's going to get kind of wet and you know, it won't taste the same because it kind of sweats in it. Yeah. But a lot of schools that have bigger populations, the suppliers are actually supplying modular pods outside the school. And they actually have like a human size oven. They have a person that's employed for 20 hours a week. The food gets delivered cold but cooked, and then it sits into the oven for 2 hours and it's cooked exactly on time for the lunch. Those ones seem to be way more successful than the ones that are arriving in hot boxes. So that's where we need consistency. Do we need to be looking at, for the smaller schools in rural settings, do we need to be looking at maybe community hubs? A bit like Meals on Wheels, and Meals on Wheels, in fairness to them, are actually supplying into some schools around the country where they can't get suppliers. But that type of thing where you have a community hub that maybe delivers out into five or six schools and not leaving it sitting there for a couple of hours, because that does hinder the quality of the food.
It's really sort of stuck with me, the way that you said that whenever you'd started this, you didn't realise that for children that might be their only... Would you be worried that you know, that it might not just have been you that thought that, and maybe some people still don't realise it?
Oh, 100%. Like, I do know that that's why this started. Like, when Regina Doherty started this in 2019, it was for child food poverty. But I, as a senator, I didn't even realise that when I was looking at these hot school meals. I genuinely didn't. And actually, in the Joint Directors Committee on Education, they had said we were going to do five or six sessions on it. And I, again, my ignorance, I was kind of going, do we really need this amount of time to talk about hot school meals? But we actually do, you know, because there's so much involved in it. Like, when you look at some of the stats that came in from the boards of management, there was a principal, I think, from a school in Tallaght in Dublin that says that they're actually having children stay longer after lunch and not going home because they're actually getting a meal.
Yeah.
They're actually increased children's well-being. I mean, that's just stuff I never thought of. Another thing is about the social skills that it brings, the social inclusion part, where you're actually sitting around a table together and eating a hot school meal and having a chat. So, I genuinely did not think about this. So I think there's an education piece here for parents. I think the schools realise it, and the boards of management realise it, because they can see the children that don't come in with food, with a lunch. But I think as us as parents, we definitely need a bit of an education piece on that, on how beneficial this is to every child in the country to actually have a meal. And
in Leinster House, would it be common knowledge?
For a lot of people that would have been here, I suppose, for the time that this was launched, they would have been absolutely okay with it. But I think I've definitely helped highlight it by running this survey. And I'm sure there were people like myself who didn't realise it, but I'm sure there are many who did realise it. It depends, I suppose, on what you've been working on for the last few years.
It is, and it's, you know, I admire that you had come forward and said that, because there's many people who maybe would just sort of sit in their hands and be like, okay, I'm not going to let anybody know that, which is, I admire that you have come forward and said that, and that you're, you know, other people can be aware of it. I'm just having a look here now. So there's 400 schools that were selected for on-site inspections. We're waiting for the report and that there, and I suppose that really will we'll hear it directly from the children from that.
That's done again the interdepartmental working group and through the Department of Social Protection, and I think that's due fairly soon. So I mean this is this is cross government. It's obviously, you know, the government that's there at the moment, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, Independence, and I think we'll all be in the Joint Directors Committee on Education. It's mixed party. Everybody wants to make this better. Everybody, I think, recognises that this is a good thing that schools have. Mm. And now it's, how do we get it even better so we have it ready for secondary schools?
Well, Senator, thank you so much for your time on this morning. And whenever that report's come out, I'm sure we'll do a follow-up. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break here just before we head on. There was another comment in there, and that was about that their child doesn't have enough time to eat the school meals, and there's, was the waste will be coming in from that way as well. So Senator Linda Nelson-Murray, thank you very much. Now, it's coming up on 10:30 and it's one day earlier, but I'm joined in studio by Garda Grainne Doherty. Grainne, how are you keeping?
Not too bad. Good morning, Donna Murray.
Now, we're in a day earlier today because it is St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. You are going to be very busy.
Very busy day ahead tomorrow.
Gregory won't be here. But so we're going to get the appeals out now this morning. So we are. Yeah. So I suppose first we're going to Buncrana, and there was a dangerous driving there.
Yes. So Gardaí are investigating a number of incidents of dangerous driving involving a black Volkswagen Passat with a partial registration of JNZ. So these incidents occurred in the area of the Cockhill Road, Buncrana, between approximately 1:45 a.m. and 3 a.m. on the morning of Sunday, the 15th of March. So we're appealing to anybody who might have witnessed any such incidents in that area between those times to contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 932 0540. If anybody travelled in that area with a dash cam between those times, we're asking them to please make that footage available to us.
And the dash cam there is always very key, because it doesn't necessarily have to be of the incident of dangerous driving. You might have met them before or after it happened, and it can help sort of pinpoint a timeline, I suppose.
Exactly. And as Greg has said, you know, we always, with nearly every appeal now, we're appealing for the dash cam footage because it really is invaluable to us. And as Greg has said before, you know, it's not up to the person themselves to go through the footage. If they think that they might have been in that area at the time, you know, drop it into us. We'll go through it and we'll give it back to them then, so they don't have any of that work to do themselves.
Going to Pettigo next, there was theft there.
Yes, this incident happened in the area of Billery, Pettigo, between 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday the 10th of March and 9 a.m. on Wednesday the 11th of March. So a galvanised sheep trailer, 8 by 4 foot, was stolen from a yard in that area between those times. We're appealing to anybody who might have observed any type of suspicious activity or vehicles in that area between those times to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530. Any relevant information alternatively can be passed on to the Garda Confidential line on 1800 666 111. That line can be used for any of our appeals.
And just thinking there with the sheep trailer, there, you know, it is coming into lambing season now, so I suppose it's important for the farmer to try and get that back as soon as possible, because they'll need it.
It is, of course, yeah. And just as well, just in relation to that, we would advise people, we will be advertising hopefully now in the near future more property marking events. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's so important for everybody, especially farmers when they have a lot of machinery, you know, to bring these in and get them property marked if possible.
What would that entail? Like, will they have to, I suppose, bring everything over, but does it take long? Because I know, I was thinking farmers especially, you know, that's to try and get a minute to get things like that there done, they might put it on the long finger, but it is important.
It is important, yeah. And usually these events, we would actually hold events times at marts, you know, where there's a good big yard, yes, a good big space, so they can bring in their, it only takes a couple of minutes. It's only a matter of really, and bring their air code with them. It's very important to bring their correct air code with them. You know, so the air code then is stamped somewhere where you will see it, but also it's stamped in a private location within the machinery as well, so that that's not going to be seen by the naked eye, you know, if you're passing by. But bring your correct air code, bring any amount of things with you at all, you know, even mobile phones, laptops. But particularly these events, some of our events are geared towards the farming community in particular. So we're hoping to have some of those up and running now in the near future. They'll be advertised on our Garda Facebook page. So if they want, everybody wants to keep an eye on there, they'll see details on there where they can get to these events.
Good stuff. And then going on to Balbuffet, there's a fraud incident that happened there last week.
Yes, and this is quite a usual occurrence, actually. I've seen this incident and I thought I would just bring it up just to make people aware and that these types of incidents are happening, just to be extra cautious. So Gardaí are appealing for the assistance of the public. In connection with an incident, it was a fraud theft incident. It happened recently in the area of Blue Cedars, Ballybuffet. Mm-hmm. So a resident in that estate advertised a mobile phone for sale online. A person then contacted them, arranged to meet them at their address at Blue Cedars. So they did. They met them there on Monday the 9th of March at about 2 p.m. So the sale of the phone was agreed there and then, and the buyer showed a screenshot of what appeared to be transfer of funds for the phone on the screen of their own phone, you know, to the seller. And the mobile phone was then handed over. No funds were actually transferred and all contact now has been cut between both parties. So we're appealing to anybody firstly who might have travelled in the area of Blue Cedars or on the Glenfin Road in Ballybuffet with a dash cam on that date, the 9th of March, between 1 p.m. and 3 p.m. to contact Gardaí in Ballyshannon on 071 985 8530. And as I said already, just we're advising the public to be aware that these types of incidents do occur quite regularly. Be extra cautious when you're selling any type of item. Never hand over items that you have for sale until you have confirmed on your own banking app. Check there and then to make sure that these funds have reached your account before you hand over any item. And yeah, just via your own app, don't take the word of the stranger on your doorstep. We're not proportioning blame now, I'd like to say also on person.
Yeah.
This is happening quite regularly. You know, we would often receive reports of this type of instance, but just to make people aware that it does happen and to be extra cautious.
I think there's an element of this as well, is that people are afraid of being perceived as rude or pushy.
I think very much so, yeah.
You're better. And the thing is, if you're worried about coming across that way, if the person that you're selling to is genuine, they won't mind.
They won't mind. And it's kind of like we're going to be talking about bogus callers in a few minutes. It's the same sort of thing. I think people, there is that thing, especially within Irish people, kind of, we're afraid to come across as rude or, you know, we don't like to be dismissive or to tell people to go away, we're not interested, but it's very important, you know, stand up for yourself. I mean, it's your property that you're handing over at the end of the day. And as you say, if this person's genuine, they won't mind in the slightest. They'll wait that extra few minutes until you've confirmed that the funds are in your account yet.
And as well, they think people sort of let their guard down in terms of being frauded or scammed whenever they can see the person in front of them. You know, there's a, I think there is that nature as well.
And I suppose, look too, maybe they're that excited that they're getting, you know, that they're getting the funds for the item, that they're just, you know, that the guard's down a wee bit maybe too. So just please be extra cautious. This is your property that you're handing over. You know, make sure that you have the money in your account for this item. Don't hand it over under any circumstances. We had incidents like this actually, it's a number of months ago now too. And I think it was actually larger items. Maybe it was a car or something like that. But the buyer had shown the same setup. The buyer had shown on their phone, look, I'm after transferring it to your account. They showed them this screenshot. And as you say then, it is difficult for a person then to say, no, I want to double check that. But do double check it. Don't be afraid of coming across as rude. It's your money that's going to be lost by you at the end of the day.
And it is. And there's, and it might be a pessimistic way to look at things, but I always find that it's people who would be very good natured that would assume the best in people that end up falling for this type of thing.
Exactly. No, don't let your guard down. You know, you're the one that's going to be at a loss at the end of it, you know, so just be extra cautious.
And also we're warning people about home heating oil thefts. The price of oil is
it's soaring at the minute. We had brought this up over the last few weeks because of the price of oil is rising. Everybody's aware of that at the minute. But we have received recent reports within the last few days in relation to the theft of home heating oil. So from a house in the area of Fawn and also in the Ballyshannon area. Mm-hmm. So just in light of these recent reports, we want to just remind the public about some preventative measures that they can take to avoid the theft of their home heating oil. Check your oil levels frequently. Sorry, excuse me. Attach tank locks. There's so many different types of locks that you can get now for your oil tank. Install lockable access gates. Install a tank alarm system, and that'll warn you if your oil level takes a sudden drop. You know, you'll be warned by that system. Increase security lighting. That's exceptionally important, you know, even for home security purposes of all descriptions. Increase the lighting around your home, particularly to the rear and the sides. Keep your tank hidden if possible, and if it's not possible, plant some shrubs or put lockable fencing around your tank, including over the top of it. Be extra vigilant following an oil delivery. Consider installing CCTV. You know, if you have a visible camera on your property, that does act as a massive deterrent.
Yeah.
And look out for your neighbours. You know, go back to the old way of doing things. Look out. Always keep an eye out for your neighbour. Don't be afraid of coming across as a nosy neighbour. Watch out for your neighbours. If you ever see anything suspicious, you know, people, vehicles in your area, or any type of activity, please report that to us immediately. You know, there's a lot to be said for that. Back years ago, I think maybe people were a lot better. People now, I think, are kind of, they're wary of being seen as being intrusive or nosy.
Don't want to be in your space or being like, oh my God, such and such. You see that? It doesn't matter who's coming or going. She'll see it. She'll let you know.
Exactly. No, and look, don't ever be afraid to contact us. Sometimes people too are wary of ringing us. Look, it could be nothing. And I'm wasting their time. They're going to think I'm an agent now. Right? Don't be afraid of it. We would much rather get a call about something and it turn out to be nothing. But at least if we're aware of it, we can go out, we can check the matter out, you know.
And the next thing that we have up is the bogus callers, which we kind of spoke about before.
Yes, so we actually talk about these quite regularly too, but these bogus callers were in the area very recently, within the last couple of weeks. So they were carrying out this tarmac scam, and they were in the Convoy, Raphoe and Letterkenny areas. Now, they're obviously not limited to those areas. They're the areas that we're aware of that they were in recent weeks. Mm. But they're highly mobile. I mean, they can pop up anywhere in the county. So the tarmac scam, a man or men, they typically go door to door claiming to be builders, working on a contract, and they've some leftover tarmac. They offer to conduct work in your driveway or surroundings at a low cost. And the material then used is often gravel chippings covered with engine oil, or it's not the right depth or type of materials to form a lasting road surface. These con men may target elderly or vulnerable residents or businesses. They claim to be official contractors working on roadworks to add credibility, and they will pop up mostly in areas where roadworks, genuine roadworks, are taking place. They'll appear mostly, we've found, in those areas. You know, they may travel half a mile down the road from those roadworks. The people in that house are aware roadworks are taking place in the area. This then adds to the whole credibility of their story.
It's sophisticated.
It is. And they do have the machinery, I believe, in some of these instances that they pull up. And, you know, they'll have all the correct machinery with them. Mm. And if there's roadworks taking place down the road from your home, these men appear in all the correct attire, the workmen gear. They have all this sorts of machinery with them. It's highly credible. Mm. It is. So just keep your guard up. Warn neighbours, warn any elderly or vulnerable family members that you have about them. These workmen, when they start carrying out work at your home, they then increase the cost of the works during the course of the work. They'll claim that this job has required more material than expected, and then they may start to issue threats. You know, of course, the nicely approach when they arrive first as businessmen and looking for your business, but things can change very quickly then, and they'll start demanding more money for this work. So please, if you ever have these types of callers at your home, we're asking your listeners, contact us immediately. Take a wee look out the window. Even you can get a reg number of what they're travelling in, the colour, the make of it. You know, give us a good description of them. That's vital to us. If they go out your gate, they swing right, they swing left. That's also crucial information for us. Take as much detail as you can. Do alert Gardaí immediately. Our advice to people is, please don't open your door to anybody unless you're sure of who they are. Use a chain lock. You know, if you're there, especially if you're living alone, the chain lock's very, you know, cost efficient. And it's great. I mean, you can still, and there's that thing again, if not wanting to be rude, not wanting to not open the door, you can still open the door, but you're still safe. You have that chain in place, you know. Get a chain lock for your door. If you capture them on CCTV, and this has been a great help to us actually with some of these bogus callers in recent months, people have let us know that they've captured them. They've heard maybe the appeal on the radio. They've then contacted us after to say, I wasn't at home. They did call to my home and I've captured them on the doorbell footage or on that, you know. Yeah. So if you hear of these callers in your area, even you're not at home and you do have a doorbell camera and you think they may have been at your property, please alert us. We'll go through that footage. Make us aware anyway. And as I said already, please advise anybody that's vulnerable or elderly, neighbours, friends, family members, let them know that this is happening and warn them in relation to it.
It is, because we do these appeals frequently. And, you know, people are still unfortunately getting caught out. So if you're hearing this and you're, you know, maybe there's maybe somebody who isn't hearing this specific appeal, I might miss the social media ones. Do reach out to them.
And people have fallen, we are aware that people have unfortunately fallen victim to this. And please, if anybody has fallen victim to this also, I should have had this in my notes, please do report the matter to us after. Don't be some people are embarrassed about it. You know, you won't have been the only one that has fallen victim to this. We have heard everything before. Don't ever be afraid to come in and tell us. We would rather know if this has happened to you to try and help you in some way.
It's the age old thing, is that if it didn't work, they wouldn't do it. Exactly. And it does work, and that's where he's going. And I suppose finally now, it's the bank holiday weekend. Everyone will be having a good time, but it is just such a time on the roads where we do hear of not so safe activities.
Yes, well, I've quite a bit here about all different bits and pieces about St. Patrick's Day. So, of course, look, the Garda Roads policing operation, that's taking place. That's throughout the St. Patrick's Bank Holiday weekend. So it actually started on 7 a.m. Thursday the 12th of March. It'll go on until 7 a.m. on Wednesday the 18th of March. And throughout this roads policing operation, Gardaí are out there. They're conducting statutory, mandatory intoxicant testing checkpoints and regular high visibility policing checkpoints, speed checks. So as we're approaching St. Patrick's Day, it's very close now at this stage. Aye. We're appealing to all road users, please don't ever drive under the influence of alcohol or drugs. All drivers are reminded to slow down, take extra care, give driving your full attention. We would also ask people if they're aware that a driver may have alcohol or drugs in their system, please don't accept a lift home from them. You know, make your excuses, get into, if they're hell-bent on driving themselves, so be it. Don't get into the car with them, make your own arrangements, get a taxi. If you're going out socialising, I don't know why I put if in there, because there's plenty of people at half the country.
When you go out socialising.
Three quarters of the country possibly will be out socialising, celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Please, we're just giving you a bit of advice, a few bits of advice. If you're going to drink alcohol, please do so responsibly. As I said, don't drive while under the influence. Plan your night out. Tell somebody where you're going and when you'll be back. Don't let your friends or family walk home alone. You know, there's safety in numbers. Mm. And if you have to walk and it's late in the early hours or whatever time of night and it's dark, stick to well-lit areas and make sure that you can be seen. Bring a wee mini torch with your armband or something, just reflective gear. Make sure that you can be seen by motorists. Take care when you're carrying personal property, your handbag, your smartphone, cash in crowded areas, and keep them in a safe location within your view. And watch out for pickpockets. You know, that happens when pubs and nightclubs are packed. Keep an eye out. Watch out for them. Keep your handbag zipped. Don't keep your wallet or your phone in your back pocket. And be careful about where you're storing your coats and your handbags. Don't leave them sitting in a seat, for instance, and a gang, if you go off the toilet and leave all sitting, presuming they'll be okay, you know, take them with you or leave somebody behind to keep an eye on them. Don't leave your drink unattended and park your car in a secure, well-lit area and ensure it's locked, and don't leave any valuables, cash or jewellery or electronics in your car. So communities, look, Donegal for weeks and months before St. Patrick's Day. The preparations are ongoing and we're all looking forward to a fantastic St. Patrick's Day. There's going to be parades taking place all across the county in towns and villages. So we're asking motorists, if you are travelling on Wednesday, please plan your journey in advance because temporary road closures, traffic delays and diversions will be in place right across the county in towns and villages. Allow extra time for your journey. And if you're attending a parade or any of the St. Patrick's Day festivities, please follow the directions of Gardaí and the stewards and the event organisers. And this is an important point as well. This happens every year in Letterkenny and it possibly happens in the other towns too. If you're attending a parade with children, please agree a meeting point just in case you happen to get separated from them. And also just point out the Gardaí to your children. You know, point out there's a guard, you know, the yellow coat, just in case if they do get separated, you know, go to them or arrange a meeting point so that you will be able to find them safely.
And another good piece of advice I heard is that if it was a case where a child got lost and they couldn't find the Gardaí or couldn't find a meeting point, is go to somebody else, go to another family, like tell them to go to someone that has children.
Exactly, or go into a cafe. Mm. You know, go into one of the shops or go into one of the cafes and ask the staff. Sure, parents will know that anyway, but just even just a meeting point, a general meeting point that you can tell them, look, come here if we get separated. And a number of our Little Blue Heroes, I'm sure the excitement levels are building now. Yes. They're going to be Grand Marshals this year at the parade here in Letterkenny. So, and our other Little Blue Heroes right across the county in their own areas, you know, they'll be taking part in their own parades in their own areas as well. So we're very grateful for their assistance. You know, it's a big day, St. Patrick's Day. We're busy St. Patrick's Day. So we're very glad they've agreed to work that day, you know, and we're very grateful for their assistance.
Yep.
And we hope they have a lovely day, you know, that they enjoy the festivities and the parades. So Letterkenny, between 1pm and 5pm tomorrow, St. Patrick's Day. So the Port Road from the station roundabout, so the whole of Main Street from the Port Road is going to be shut right down to the bottom of Lower Main Street. It's the same every year. And then from the bottom of Lower Main Street over to the old Dunn Stores is also going to be shut to allow for the parade. People will be aware, it's the same road closures every year. Diversions will be in place. There'll be plenty of Gardaí out and about in the beat to assist if anybody needs our assistance. So we're just looking. We hope everybody has a safe and a happy St. Patrick's Day. We hope it's a good day. We hope the sun's out tomorrow for it.
Oh, fingers crossed.
Please.
Fingers
hopefully.
Crossed, fingers
we're
crossed.
Due a wee bit of sunshine. That's so hopefully it. Now tomorrow the sun will come out. And listen, all of our stations, you know, if anybody needs the 24-hour stations, Buncrana, Ballyshannon, Milford, Letterkenny, they're all open on a 24/7 basis. So if anybody needs us, contact one of those stations.
Perfect. That's Garda Grania Doherty. All of that information about road closures and stuff as well we'll have up on our website. But Grania, thank you very much. Good luck tomorrow. We'll be a busy day for you and your colleagues.
It will. But you know what? It's an enjoyable day. It's always a happy day. Everybody's in good spirits. So as long as the sun comes out and we're not all drenched just standing down the town. But no, it's a day I look forward to be honest.
Oh,
work.
That's good.
It
that's
is.
Good.
It's a parade and everything and everybody's in good spirits. It's nice.
Good stuff. Okay, then. Well, you might see her out tomorrow if you're out in Letterkenny. It's Garda Grania Doherty. I was talking to Garda Grania Doherty there about the road safety campaign and that's been underway for a while now. I'm joined by Christy Galligan, a former Garda sergeant. Every 45 minutes on average, Christy, there's been an arrest for drink or drug driving.
Yeah, and that's a very worrying statistics. You know, we know what the statistics are in relation to drunk and drug driving, and you have between 7 and 18,000 prosecutions a year before the courts in relation to drug and drunk driving. And that's a worrying statistic. People are still not getting, the message is still not getting through to a lot of people in relation to this offence and other offences, just not that. Mm. We have a serious issues in relation to driving without insurance, you know, driving without seatbelts. People, I think there were 61,000 offences in relation to mobile phones up until May of 2025 there, people using mobile phones while driving. And that's a very concerning statistic. Drunk driving is a very serious offence, drunk and drug driving, and it's one of the most contentious pieces of legislation that comes before the courts. And we see a case recently where it's gone now from district court to the high court, now possibly going to the Supreme Court in relation to the continuity of evidence in relation to the retention of the samples by the Garda Síochána. And now that delays a lot of cases, and cases are put back then multiple times, maybe over a year, 2 years, until those cases are heard before the Supreme Court or High Court. So it's a very worrying statistic that we have people who are still willing to go out multiple times, sometimes, unfortunately, and jeopardise the safety of other road users, totally unconcerned. And you know, it really comes back to the issue of drunk driving and speeding, comes back to the personal choices people make when they get behind the wheel of a car. and are in a truck or a tractor, whatever it may be, whatever mechanically propelled vehicle is on a road. And the, when you look at the statistics so far this year, 35 people dead on our roads, quite a few pedestrians, unfortunately. We have e-scooters, we have car drivers and passengers. Those statistics haven't come down from 190 last year. So there's a big issue with road safety in this country. For some reason or other, we're way behind in relation to, and I think we're ninth in the European scale in relation to road safety. Now, you know, I mean, you have a lot more people driving on our roads. You have a lot more people who are, the population of this country has gone up quite exponentially in the last number of years, up to nearly 5 million people, over 5.1 million people. And there's a lot more people on our roads. Unfortunately, we've seen a reduction in the road traffic core as well, from the high of 1,094 or 1,064 down to 60. I think they lost about 40%.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of, I suppose people could point to a lot of different directions as to why this is failing. I suppose just to look at the drink and drug driving, are we finding, or in your experience whenever you would have been working with this, would it have been a case of people were driving home from the pub or from the nightclub, or is it that it's the morning after and they don't realise how long it's staying?
And a lot of people are getting caught now for the morning after as opposed to the night before. Unfortunately, they get their, you know, thinking that they're, you know, I'll have a glass of water now and I'll be grand, it'll flush. It doesn't flush through your system. And unfortunately, a lot of people now, we're finding more and more people are taking a combination of drink and drugs.
Yeah.
And they're, when their breathalyzer or the sample is taken from, they're still over the limit. And you just don't get rid of it in 24 hours. Some of it, like the drugs, can stay in it for longer periods.
They can stay for a long time, yeah.
Concern too, that somebody is doing the combination of both and still willing to get behind the wheel of a car the following morning.
And we've seen that there was a message out from, I think actually it was from the government themselves, to, you know, it was kind of the approach of, if you are deciding and you've already decided that you're going to do drugs, you know, this is what you need to be aware of. You know, it's, you're not always going to get what you're offered. You'll be told that it's one thing. It could be anything.
Unfortunately, I'm as a former member of the drug squad here in Donegal. I've seen that and there's still large seizure of drugs being done and great work being done by the drug squad here in Donegal in relation to seizures. But it's a combination of what can be put into a certain drug. Yeah. And we found from talcum powder to rat poison to right across the board. So, you know, people don't know what they're ingesting.
What was the most surprising thing that you'd found in your career?
quite a lot of things. But I suppose we had a lad who sold talcum powder pretending to be cocaine, you know, and people were sniffing talcum powder up their noses thinking it was cocaine, you know, thinking they were getting a high and wondering why they weren't getting value for money. Yeah. I suppose that was one of them, you know. But, you know, there is a serious issue here, and we know that there are plenty of people out there that are constantly talking about the issues concerning road traffic safety. We have the issue of courts reducing dangerous driving cases to careless driving, because if you reduce it from dangerous driving to careless driving, the judge has discretion not to disqualify you. You know, you get a fine and penalty points. I mean, all of these things, if you only have to look at the statistics, and I've been looking at them all morning before I came onto the programme here, and I didn't realise how serious, how many penalty points are being issued for numerous different offences.
Yes.
You know, it's a simple thing, you know, getting into your car, doing the basic things right, but also the thing that you have to be concerned about is the person you meet on that road. It's not about you being careful, it's about the person you may meet. An oncoming car. So I think we all have a duty and responsibility as road users, whether you be a pedestrian, bicycle, on a bicycle, or an e-scooter, or a car, whatever, a truck. You know, we all have a responsibility to each other.
See, in terms now of you know, the messaging, some people will say that it's failing. Is there any other approach that you think we could do? I've heard that there was talk in, was it one of the Oireachtas committees, about the interlock system?
I suppose we can talk about it. Look, we've talked about how the messaging maybe is failing to get across, and I think we need to get that message across. And I think one of the things we're trying to get across is to a lot of the younger people, because a lot of the fatalities involves younger people and primarily younger males.
Mm.
And unfortunately, we see a lot of the statistics show that, you know, it's down to speed or just careless driving or whatever it may be. But we need to, the message isn't very clear, even though it comes across as clear. We need to get back to the school. The educational boards need to be brought in. Gardaí need to be going back to, say, schools and colleges and emphasising, like we did many years ago, the ramifications of when you get behind the wheel of a car, what can happen if you don't take care, have due care and attention.
And a lot of people will talk about the ads that you used to see on TV and how graphic they were. I think, and it's not a point I hear many people make, that, you know, they say they should roll these ads out on social media, but whenever you're looking at the likes of TikTok and stuff, that won't, it'll violate the guidelines. So I think there needs to be some kind of a space made for that.
I think so. I agree with you there. You know, young people now are on social media much more so than they're probably watching television. Mm. So and using all of those apps to get that message across is very, very important. I think you have to understand, you know, that we all have been touched by tragedy in relation to road traffic incidents over the years. I've been to many dangerous driving causing death over the years. And it's the knock-on effect within society to families, loved ones and everyone else that has a huge effect for years to come. And if only people only realised that how that affects people in general, you know, you might think twice before you get behind a car and do something stupid.
And now, just we were speaking there with Garda Grande Dorty beforehand about that it is coming into St. Patrick's Day. With it being on a Tuesday as well, I feel like there's a much higher risk for the morning after for people to be over the limit and they don't realise.
And that's it. While we enjoy St. Patrick's Day and have all the festivities and the crack will be good, I'm sure, in all arts and parts of the country and probably globally, there are people who will probably drink too much or do something else or take drugs or do a combination of both and then think that they're okay the following morning. Just be aware that the Gardaí will be out in force to do what they normally do in relation to bank holiday weekends and things, that they will be out in force, and enforcement is very important. I think there is a huge problem in relation to our roads policing units that we need to see the numbers increased. I know all guards have a duty and responsibility to enforce road traffic laws no matter where they are, but we're not just talking about statistics, we're talking about people's lives.
Mm.
People's lives are very, very important, and I think we need to all take just stop for a second and think what tragedy you could cause if you get behind the wheel of a car while drunk or taking.
And it is. It's a case that death, obviously, is the worst case scenario. Yeah. You could really hurt someone. You could disable them
really
for life.
Someone. There's many people who are very, very seriously injured and their lives have been changed dramatically in relation to drunk driving and speeding over the years. And, you know, and those are the people that can tell their stories. And those are the people that you need to hear from.
Mm.
I think more people need to hear from those people who have been affected by road traffic fatalities and injuries.
Former Garda Sergeant Christy Galligan, thank you very much. I've just caught sight of the clock there, so I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you very much for that. I really appreciate your time on it. And just what I was going to move on to next there, just in terms of that, if you're the driver as well and you end up with a driving offence, it's going to end up that you may not be able to drive anymore. If you're living in Donegal, that's going to be a problem. If you end up with a criminal record, that will affect your potential to travel as well. And just to very quickly note that drugs is very commonplace. I myself have been offered cocaine so casually, so many times on nights out or at different music festivals. So just please be on high alert. Take care. And, you know, really look out for yourself and for each other over the bank holiday weekend. But this is where I'm going to have to leave it. I want to thank Caroline Orr for researching and producing today's programme. And Sinead Black out there is also on the phones. It's John Breslin up next with Around the Northwest.